2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Hot Sheet Podcast with Jeff and Josh. I am Josh in North Carolina. That's Jeff in the Northeast. The Bear and Parrot Show. If you've listened to us before, I'm the bear. He's the parrot. For obvious reasons, if you've ever met us, I mean, he clearly looks like a parrot and I clearly look like a bear. You know, it makes a lot of sense. I think everyone says that, right, Jeff? They say, Jeff looks like a parrot, correct? It's a parrot.
I haven't heard that. I thought it was because I just, I repeat everything. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you're a repeater. You learn words real easy. You know, you fly around, you subsist on a diet of seeds and fruit. You're a typical parrot. We've heard it all. It's cliche. Just the old trope, Jeff is a parrot, right? Anyhow, parrot or human, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. You know, I was out at the ballpark a lot last week and plan on making another run this weekend to see the Somerset folks and pitchers and, you know, et cetera up in Portland. So I'll go see them. Those old Patriots. Nice. Felt weird calling them Patriots.
Yep, the Somerset Patriots. And you would be seeing them. You're going to see them in Portland, Maine. You're going up. How far is that for you?
That's closer than New Jersey is.
Oh, okay.
So that's I don't have anyone within 100 miles, but I want to see some games this week. And
I've got the opposite this week. I've got there's guys. There's some teams that are more than 100 miles, but Down East is in town versus Delmarva. Probably going to go take a look at them at some point. Fredericksburg is in Zebulon. So I'll see Susanna and the Greenhouse Effect in the middle of their lineup. That's Elijah Green and Brady House, for those of you who don't speak pun. I think who else is around? Greensboro has Jersey Shore in. And I think that's pretty much it. But this is a Hot Sheet podcast, Jeff, so let's start talking about Hot Sheet. The first two guys on the sheet this past week were pretty easy. Marcelo Mayer, who has decided, you know, after I stopped seeing him to turn it on. Now, it may be my effect, or it may be the fact that the entire team was under the weather when I got to see them in Greensboro, so they were all performing as if they were under the weather. But he performed really well in the past series against Hudson Valley. And then he really turned it on in Asheville, which it's Asheville. But, you know, I talked to some scouts who were there, and it's not just Asheville. They really like what they saw from him. Jeff, what do you think of Marcelo Mayer?
Yeah, he really turned it on this week. Thank God for Asheville, right? And their, 370 center field fence. That is I was looking at the dimensions of that park yesterday, and it's honestly remarkable. But you know, I think this is what he was kind of billed as, right? As a guy with hit tools, some, you know, good approach, projectable power, that would come as well. You know, I haven't gotten any firsthand looks at Marcelo Mayer. So hopefully that's coming at some point in the future. He's gonna have to keep hitting in order for me to see him, probably, because I'm not going to get down to Greenville, but I will. I guess I could see him in Brooklyn in a couple of weeks. So I would have to make another trip up north or south, excuse me, down south to go see him, unless he ends up north in Portland. So at some point I'll see Marcelo Mayer, but I don't know how soon is now.
Yeah, I've just had incredibly bad luck with Red Sox prospects this year, outside of Roman Anthony, who I wrote up as the helium guy this week. And we might get to him later. But you know, I saw Mayer. I mean, I saw 8 swings and misses in the same game from him. Anthony Solometto really had his way with him. There may be some issues with left-on-left spin there. But also, like I said, you can't really discount the fact that he wasn't feeling himself during that series. Wickelman Gonzalez in that series, I believe, got 2 outs for me. Luis Perales in the series at Salem, I think, got 2 outs for me as well. Miguel Blaze in that series even looked, he had some tools, but he wasn't, you know, the guy I was really excited to see, and some scouts kind of poo-pooed him a little bit for a couple of reasons that I've detailed in other places this week. So yeah, basically, if I see Red Sox prospects, it's not going to be a good time for those guys. So I will try to stop watching them. Number two on the list is one of my favorite players in the minor leagues, and I think my favorite pitcher in the minor leagues, definitely the best pitcher I've never seen, and that is Eury Pérez. And he had a Eury Pérez week. He has 42 strikeouts this year, and 20 of them came in this past week at the expense of the Mississippi Braves. Congratulations to Cal Conley and Arden Pabst. They both hit solo home runs off him, which I believe counts for all of the damage that he allowed in that series over 11 innings. And, you know, we had some feedback from our recent top 100 update that Eury Pérez is the top arm in the minors, or at least top arm on prospect lists. And he was certainly a candidate for that coming in. It was him, Grayson Rodriguez, and Andrew Painter. I think I was team Eury, though I could understand the arguments for both of them. And don't hold me to that, but he's got, you know, a lot of things people look for. He's got the stuff. There are some nits to pick. Someone pointed out to me that his numbers control-wise versus left-handers are not particularly good. And for whatever reason, he has a terrible time in the fifth inning. It's like a 10 ERA in the fifth inning. And then the sixth inning, he's only pitched into it twice, but he's, you know, goes back to his dominant self. In any case, stuff is there, and this year he gets to play with the rise ball, which Kyle Glazer detailed in a previous article at BA. Basically, they're using the super pre-tack ball for the first half of the season in the Southern League, and the early results say that it is giving the pitchers quite an advantage, especially when it comes to, you know, the under-the-hood metrics. Like in terms of induced vertical break and things like that. So he's dominating with that, but I wouldn't consider that a mirage since he dominated that league last year. And he entered the year last year as the youngest pitcher in the league, and he's still the youngest pitcher in the league, or at least was on opening day. Point is, Eury Pérez is really, really good and had a really, really good week. Jeff, any thoughts on Eury Pérez?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think feel like in the public discourse that leading up to the last couple of weeks, there was like a bit of maybe prospect fatigue with Eury Pérez. It felt like people were really trying to push like Ricky Tiedemann and other pitchers above Pérez. And it never kind of made any sense to me, having seen both of them and seen both of them recently. And this is prior to Tiedemann getting hurt, of course. But he goes deep into games. The stuff is there. There's good secondaries. The fastball is good. I think with Pérez, it's just a matter of, you know, if he lands his fastball in the upper quadrants, it's pretty much unhittable. It's just a matter of him doing that consistently. He's got different ability. He's got ability to shape it differently as well. He can kind of throw a bit of a cut fastball as well, in addition to like more of a straight cutter, kind of cut slider, kind of, you know, secondary breaking ball that he throws. The changeup's really good. And he'll float a 12-6 curveball by every so often that kind of, you know, changes your eye level. So he's an interesting one, man. I mean, I like Eury a lot. And I was saying last night, I think to Dylan on the fantasy podcast, this is a guy that wouldn't shock me if he's up in the major leagues at some point this summer with the way that he's pitching if it continues.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to get to AAA first. I hope that's coming soon. I really hope that's coming soon since Jacksonville comes into Durham at the end of the month. And like I said, he's the best pitcher I've never seen. So I would really like to see him. I've watched him a million times on MILB TV and talked to him on Zooms post game because their broadcaster, Eric Bremer, is one of the best and always, you know, does a great job promoting their players. But like, you know, I think he's done with Double A at this point. Like, he's had a good year at Double A. You know, he opened last year there. He really turned it on last year on April 29th, and then went crazy from there. He had a little blip with the injury, came back really strong, and helped the Pensacolas win the Southern League Championship. So yeah, Eury Pérez, really good last week, really good in general. Pretty easy candidate for number one or two. You could be one and 1A this week on the hot sheet. Moving down a little further, Jeff, I will let you go on a sermon about Justin Durden. And go.
I don't have to. throwing me out there for a sermon. Congregation, Justin Durden, extremely athletic. I think he's showing the power now. He struggled early on this season, but he was good in spring training, spent most of spring training, if not all of spring training, with a major league team, sort of a late cut. The power started to show up this week. The numbers started to show up this week. If you look at my hot sheet write-up, I actually show you how much of an impact this week, where I think he had, if I'm not mistaken, it was 4 multi-hit games, and then 4 consecutive games with home runs to end the week out of 5 games. So pretty remarkable numbers there. He went in an absolute tear, and he raised his batting line fairly significantly, which just kind of goes to show you how silly the sample sizes still are, where one really strong week, regardless of how good that week is, can raise your can raise your batting average, on base percentage, and slugging as much as it did for Durden. And just, I have the number in front of me now. He was 192, 284, 295 entering the week. And last week, his performance, the numbers jump to 269, 339, 519. So just goes to show you how much a good week can do. 13 hits can raise your average substantially, pretty much more than double some of those numbers. So, yeah, it was an interesting week. Still had some strikeouts there. You know, not a lot of walks. But the thing with Durden is there's power. There is some speed. He can play a few different positions, so he's probably best on a corner. It's an interesting guy, another interesting sort of Astros player that was underrated as an amateur, and they develop him into something that's far more interesting, which seems to be sort of the theme with the Astros over the last couple of years, where they haven't had a lot of high picks, a lot of money to spend internationally, but they keep on churning out at least viable major league players.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, one good week. It's also one good week playing in Albuquerque, which is a bit of a launch pad. And you'll notice the Sugarlands had a game there where they, as one Twitterer put it, gave up 8 runs and still won by 16. And for those of you who aren't great at math, that's a 24 spot the Sugarland Space Cowboys put up on the Isotopes there that week. So, you know, Jeff and I were talking about it offline. It's kind of a tangent here, but I pity trying to evaluate certain guys this year. Like, we talked about the carry ball in the Southern League. Well, if you're in the Southern League and you go to the Pacific Coast League, now you're going from the carry ball where the pitchers have the super advantage to the PCL where there's a lot of places where hitters have a certain advantage. Like the example I'm using was one of my kind of favorite under the radar guys, Christian Mano with the White Sox, who's been a couple of years, guys saying, you know, watch out for this guy. He's really good. And this year, well, he's really turned it on of late. He's performing really well in the Southern League, but he's also one of the guys who really loves these new baseballs. So I think we said his IVB has jumped like 7 inches thanks to the new baseballs, which is kind of absurd. But if you're going to see him there, he's going to dominate. Well, now you're going to move to the IL, and that's not the PCL, obviously, but it's the IL, and it's Charlotte, where hitters have the advantage in Charlotte. One of the prettiest parks in the country. Love it there when I do get a chance to go there, but it is a launch pad. So I don't know how you would evaluate him from one stop to the next. It's got to be tricky. That's kind of a tangent here, and I will use that tangent to take us to a commercial break. We will be right back here on the Bear and Parrot Hot Sheet Podcast in 3, 2, 1.
If you know me, you know how much I hate making plans. But something I hate even more is having nothing to do. So enter Game Time. Game Time has made it so easy to look up events happening tonight in my area, and I can buy tickets the easy way. So maybe I'll head to a Nationals game, or I'll go see a concert or a comedy show, whatever. I get access to the best seats and the best deals at the last minute, all while keeping my plans stress-free, just how I like them. I mean, it's the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps and you're set. Tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never have to dig through all of those unread emails. Snag the tickets without the stress with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download GameTime today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
And we're back. So, Jeff, we're going to move down this list a little further, and we'll go to Jordan Beck, who I happened to see, didn't happen to see. I was in Eugene for 3 days, and they played Spokane, which is a loaded lineup, a little less loaded than it we would hope, because Sterling Thompson was out getting an MRI, so he wasn't there. Which kind of stunk because he entered batting like 460. I think he was a minor league's leading hitter or tied with Philip Evans coming into the series. But he's stuck on 462 since he didn't get to play in that series at all. But when there was plenty of other guys on that team, you know, Adele Amador was on that team, Yankeel Fernandez, Juan Guerrero, Benny Montgomery, and Jordan Beck, who had a really fun time in Eugene. He hit four home runs. I put in the hot sheet. Well, it's not often a guy can beat three teams in one series because Eugene played as the Emeralds, the Exploding Whales, and the Monarchas that series. And he did some damage against all three of those clubs. He hit four home runs. I think one thing to notice about him is he can really hit a fastball. I think three of his four home runs came on fastballs. He looked a little less comfortable against quality spin, so that's something to watch. But he's got he entered the series with three home runs and left it with seven. That's a pretty good little series for Jordan Beck. What do you think of Jordan, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, the power's always been there. Based on the numbers I had seen, you know, over the last couple of years, the approach isn't bad. There is maybe some contact question marks with Beck. But overall, I mean, he's a power bat that, you know, you hope gets on base at a high clip and, you know, does damage. Obviously, you know, had a pretty strong season last year at Tennessee. He's a bit streaky, so he'll go on these hot streaks where he goes off for 2 weeks at a 3 weeks at a time and then gets real cold. But another sort of interesting, somewhat athletic Rockies prospect, and they have a lot of these guys in the system right now, and a lot of guys with pretty big power. So he's one that I'm kind of interested to see what he looks like once he gets out here to Hartford, whether that's later this year or early next year. I'm sure I'll get some looks at old Mr. Beck, but he didn't hit much for me in the Cape a couple summers ago while he was an amateur, and that always kind of sticks with me because I think I saw like a dozen Harwich games, and I don't know if I ever saw him hit a homer. Big batting practice, though.
Yeah, no, he was it's tricky. He had a good batting practice for me, but it's a little tricky with Eugene because they share that field with the Ducks, and on days when the Ducks aren't on the road, the game starts at 7:30, and the pro teams don't get to use the field until 5-ish. So only one team gets to take batting practice. So I think I only got one BP of those guys. And he was pretty interesting. It was a fun series overall. Got Gabriel Hughes, who was really good for four innings and then really bad for one. Like he allowed 8 runs in one inning. It was amazing because he got the first 2 outs of the inning on 2 pitches and then allowed 8 runs. It just everything, the third hitter of the inning, Gordy Santos popped a home run, and then everything just went to heck from there. So that was a weird look at him. He clearly needs something else to turn the lineup over a few more times. There's a lot of other interesting guys that we'll talk about in the future podcasts in that series. And I think I'm going back there in late August to see what that version of the Emeralds looks like. And I think I'll see Spokane again because they will be in Hillsboro at that time. So, you know, now you know what I'm doing in late August.
So, congratulations.
Yes, I found a really good flight and I jumped on it. For going further down the hot sheet, I know we've got one of your favorites here in Mason Wynn, who, based on our top 100 feedback, was a little divisive. We had some guys saying move him up, we had some guys moving down, so I think we kept him pretty static. Jeff, what do you love about Mason Wynn? I know he's one of your boys.
Oof. Really putting some pressure on me here. Mm-hmm. It's like good players, coach. That's kind of how I look at it. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a guy that has a variety of skills. I think there's always been projectable power that we knew there was going to be more that came. This is the youngest guy to start the season in AAA. And, you know, he struggled. And it's not a shock that that would happen. Last week, he turned it on. Had his first multi-home run game of his professional career, which I think is probably a good sign that he's breaking out of it a little bit. You know, it's warming up. Ball's starting to carry a little bit more. He's starting to feel it a little bit more. You know, we know about the arm. A lot of his defensive ability is sort of carried by that ability to throw. And he's somebody that, you know, I don't know if the actions are great. There's still some improvement that probably needs to be made there. I know there was some talk of him playing more second base. I don't think that's much of a concern. I mean, he still started 24 of however many games at shortstop. There's been some errors this year, but, you know, that will happen. Yeah, I think overall it's just the impact that he could have on both sides of the ball. The hit tool is pretty good. The approach is pretty good. And he's starting to show more power. So just a matter of time, you know, once again, it's funny how a good week can sort of change the disposition of some of these players' lines and sort of how they look out there. But another guy that, you know, raised his numbers pretty significantly with a good week. You know, he was slugging .319 going into the week, left the week slugging .414. Has another performance like that, who knows what he's slugging.
Yeah, it's a tough, you know, position to be in, having to, you know, judge guys on early samples and things like that. You know, you look at some of these guys for the hot sheet and for the things we're writing, it, you know, pitchers have made 5 starts. And because they're early, a lot of these starts are pretty short too. So the sample size is not great on a lot of them. So we don't know, you know, who's who just yet. We'll move down the list a little bit further with a guy we ID'd last year who just missed the cut for the Yankees 30 this year because he didn't do really well in his first taste of full season ball, but he has turned it on this year. And that's Jared Serna. He is the cousin, I believe, of Luis Serna, the right-hander, who also popped up last year but has been, I believe, on the injured list all year. But Jared Serna, he's an interesting guy. He makes a lot of contact. He hits the ball hard, and that's pretty much it. His defensive profile is, you know, he's not going to stand out at any spot. He's a second baseman by trade. He's not a burner by any means. So he's going to have to hit and hit a ton. And this past week, he hit and hit a ton. He came into the week with 3 extra base hits. And left it with 9 extra base hits, including his first 2 home runs against Bradenton. So he's a guy who he's kind of on my radar, and I'm going to the Florida State League at some point here in the near future. He'll be on my list of guys to watch. I'm going to the West Coast of the Florida State League. He'll be on my list of guys to watch just because, you know, if you're going to have one tool, make it the hit tool. Right, Jeff?
I would agree with that. Either that or be incredibly fast, like the Flash.
Well, then especially with the new rules.
Like a superpower, right?
I think isn't the rule that they're floating, you can have a pinch runner that doesn't have to stay in the game, if I remember that correctly.
What is this, the Atlantic League rules?
Yeah, I think the Atlantic League rule. Like, if that comes to the big leagues, like, you know, Terrence Gore, hello. I would think like a guy like Nassim Nunez would be up there, and any other like 80 or 90 grade runner, you can name would be up there. I mean, that'd be really interesting to see where it's pinch runner, and that's all he does. Just get your go back and get Herb Washington and let him run track for you on the base paths. But in any case, yeah, the point is Jared Serna, he can hit just a bit. And I want to see how it plays the rest of the year and if he gets to Hudson Valley and all that good stuff. But he's really intriguing. He does some of the stuff you really want to watch. Let's see here. Who else is on this hot sheet list? Oh, another guy you've seen. I'll let you go on another sermon. Tell us about the good man, Hunter Goodman.
Yeah, it's Saul Goodman. Hunter,
that's Saul Goodman.
Hey, no, it's Saul Goodman. So Hunter Goodman, I mean, I think the thing that's so impressive about Goodman is he was kind of written off despite 36 home runs last year, which is kind of crazy, but the approach wasn't great. Did a lot of damage in the lower levels. I think there were a lot of concerns. Can this guy consistently make contact and swing at the right pitches against more advanced pitching that you see in Double A? And I think in a lot of instances, Double A is where the rubber sort of meets the road. And he's made some adjustments in his game. He's not overwhelmingly patient, and the contact numbers aren't, you know, crazy. It's not 90% contact rates or whatever, but he's making more contact. He's swinging at less pitches outside of the zone. That's leading to more results. I think the power can translate because it's double plus power pretty easily. You see how hard he hits the ball. His like 90th percentile exit velocity is well above 108 miles per hour. He's mashing. So, you know, for me, it's pretty easy to sort of look at a guy like this that's made some adjustments in his game, made some improvements. He's still fairly young. The biggest question is where does he play defensively? But there might be some upside that this is a guy that can catch a little bit from here to there, from here and there, but also maybe handle first base and maybe handle a corner outfield spot like left field. He's not great anywhere, but I think the versatility probably boosts his profile a little bit, makes it a little bit less concerning. But yeah, overall, I think if you look at the improvements in approach and contact, and know the kind of power that Goodman has, there's some, you know, hard, like everyday regular upside there.
Yeah, he's an interesting one. I think you nailed him. It's kind of chapter and verse from some of the scouts I've talked to about him this year. The Rockies system, I think, is pretty sneaky. The team that I just mentioned, Spokane, is super loaded, but there's other guys up and down the system. I see Ezekiel Tovar starting to turn it up in the big leagues. Doesn't count as a prospect anymore, but good young ball player. And we will close this podcast by going up just a little bit on the list with Noel V. Marte, who moved down on our most recent iteration of the top 100. And he must have gotten access to our content management system because he saw that and decided to go off this week with 4 home runs for Double A Chattanooga, where he's one of the younger players in the league. But the reason we moves him down is because, you know, we reached out to, I believe, half a dozen pro scouting directors or pro scouting director types for this list. This isn't just, you know, stuff we're doing based on stat lines or anything. And there was a pretty uniform sense of move this guy down because to that point, he hadn't really been hitting, kind of a slow start, like, just like he did last year. And perhaps more concerning, he's playing third base now. He's not a shortstop anymore, or at least it doesn't look like he's going to be one in the long term, especially considering the glut of shortstop prospects the Reds have. So if he wasn't hitting and he was playing third base, well, that's a tough combo there, coach. He's going to need to continue to have a lot more weeks like he does this year. And further, he's gotten bigger. Like he's grown his way off shortstop. He's going to have to, like I said, really, really, really hit going forth to be that way to have his stock, you know, bounce back up again. Basically, that's a long way of saying right now he's got a little bit of a profile problem going on. Although this week is kind of an outlier. Jeff, what do you think about Noel V?
Yeah, I think it's funny because we had gotten some move down feedback on, you know, Marte, and then he goes out and has a tremendous week. And it seems like that is just the nature of it. You know, I think that if you look at this guy, it was always pretty obvious that he wasn't going to stick at shortstop unless he was an absolutely standout defender. If you watched him for even, you know, a few games, you probably knew that wasn't going to be the case. The power's always been there. It's a big league body. You know, he's broad shoulders and incredibly strong. He looks like a big leaguer now. He has for a few years. And the approach has never been as bad as I think people think it is. It's just the iterations of his swing at times aren't the most visually appealing. And, you know, I think that because he's a little bit stiffer at times and doesn't really have a great usage of his lower half, it's very minimal in terms of like his step and hit. I think some people sometimes think like, I don't know about this, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, beyond even the aesthetics of the swing, I mean, he's performed his entire professional career pretty much. Has hit for some power, maybe not as much as you might anticipate based on the broadness of his shoulders and size of his muscles, etc. But he's a guy that I think can hit, and the approach is fine. Is he a superstar? Probably not. I know that there were some people that were trying to push him up to that level maybe 2 years ago. I don't think he's that, but I do think he's a guy that will play every day in the big leagues, will hit if he gets the opportunity to hit in Cincinnati. It's not too bad.
Yeah, he's been a bit of a divisive one and has been for a while. He's kind of made the last 2 years have been slow starts. So we'll see. And you know, the reviews coming back on him from the Arizona Fall League were not great either. So we'll see. Hopefully he has a lot more of these weeks and, you know, has a good career in the big leagues. Since, you know, we rank them and we move guys up and we move guys down, but we want them all to succeed. We don't root for anybody to not succeed. Jeff, what are you working on this week?
Have a article coming out, similar in the fashion to the one that I put out on Paul Steens on Dylan Cruz, kind of comparing him to the top of our top 100 list and sort of asking folks within the game where he would rank. That should come out, I think, on Wednesday. And, you know, I'll be working on a couple other things I'm cooking up in terms of maybe some early performers like I did with pitchers. I'll do something similar for hitters, guys that are performing and have good underlying data, etc. And, you know, I'm always doing podcasts on fantasy. And of course I relaunched the 90th percentile podcast and now have a new co-host in Matt Pajak, who, if you're not familiar with Matt, you should follow him. He's one of the owners of Loden Sports and they do data driven athletic testing, not just for baseball, but for a variety of sports. And he has some really interesting insights in the game. So we'll be rolling out part two of that one. And actually one of the guys we're going to be talking to is AJ Smith-Shaver, I think, in part three.
Well, that's a nice little dovetail into what we're going to roll out tomorrow, where this podcast being recorded Tuesday, so it'll be on Wednesday. We talked about guys, I think today on the site we have risers and fallers in the top 100, and we are putting out guys to watch for because we're about to get a fair amount of graduations. I think by the time we record our next Bear and Parrot podcast, Anthony Volpe and Masataka Yoshida will have bid the world of prospects adieu. Kodai Senga is probably not far behind. And there's a few other guys who are coming quickly as far as graduations are concerned. And the way it works is people have to move into those spots. We have to have a top 100 at all times. Talent in the minor leagues is not great right now. It's not terrible, but it's not great at this point. But there are some guys who are up arrow early in the season, and I will spoil it and say AJ Smith-Shaver is one. He's a young 20 years old. He's going to pitch at 20 years old all season long, if I know how ages and math work, and when the end of the season is. And he just, you know, dominated at high A, and he's going to get promoted to Double A Mississippi, where he made his first start. The underlying numbers are really good. There's a whole lot to like about that guy from a stat sheet perspective and a performance perspective. A little more of a violent delivery type guy. Like in the fastball and the slider are really nasty, that changeup. if that changeup comes along, you got something really, really good. And frankly, if that changeup comes along and he stays healthy and the Braves make the playoffs, I said it in Slack earlier today, I wouldn't mind shoving him in a postseason bullpen and letting him eat if everything keeps going well the rest of the season. And as far as games, you know, I mentioned earlier, there's those teams I mentioned going on around here, hoping to see the first non-sim game action for Harlan Susanna. And that's pretty much it for me. So we'll wrap this up right about now. Jeff, any final thoughts?
No, I'm glad to have you back. Glad to have the bear and parrot flying and riding again.
I'm happy to be back, but I'm pretty bummed that not in Oregon anymore, especially because the humidity started to set in here in North Carolina, which is a major bummer because humidity in Oregon really isn't a thing unless it's raining. But in any case, for Jeff, I'm Josh. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for the download. Thank you for subscribing to Baseball America. Have a good week. Bye.